You're listening to Food Integrity Now with Carol Gravet, Matt Spaeth, and Jeannie Smith, revealing the truth about the food we eat.
Hello, and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Jeannie Smith, the host of your show today. On Food Integrity Now, we not only talk about issues that affect our global food supply, we also bring you integrity news and information on various topics that are affecting the quality of our lives. Our goal is to bring you this information in an uncensored and honest way so you can use it in creating change in both your life and the lives of others. You can find us on the web at foodintegritynow.org. You can listen to all our shows directly on our site or on iTunes. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. On today's show, we're going to talk about pink slime and ammoniated beef. And we'll also be talking about the FDA and the USDA and just what the difference is. Our show today is brought to you by Willard Water. Our guest today is Amanda Hitt, who is a lawyer and director of the Food Integrity Campaign for the Government Accountability Project, which is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to promote corporate and government accountability by protecting whistleblowers. Their website is www.whistleblower.org. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so happy to have you on the show today to talk about these topics. First, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and the work you do.
Well, I'm an attorney at the Government Accountability Project, and I'm the program director for the Food Integrity Campaign. And the Food Integrity Campaign is a little offshoot of the Government Accountability Project. Government Accountability Project has several different programs, a corporate program, national security program, environmental and international as well. So we do a great deal of work across a lot of different areas, but my specific area is food integrity.
Well, that's wonderful. And first, let's go into pink slime. There's been a lot of news about it recently. Can you tell us what is pink slime and how it is put into our hamburger? Where does it come from? And just what is the process that it goes through to be created?
Well, let's start with the process. First, you take scrap meat that's generally reserved for dog food, things that have fallen on the floor of the slaughterhouse and generally considered inedible. And actually, they're just full of deadly pathogens and things that could hurt you. So you take those and you grind them all up. And then stick them in a centrifuge, and you pull off the fat, you render off the fat, and then you then take that mushy mass and you flash freeze it with an ammonia gas, and that then gets turned into a block, and that pink block, the pink slime that people talk about, is then turned into it's ground into other beef products. So let's say you just have regular standard ground beef, you'll blend in this block of finely texturized beef, these pathogenic trimmings that have been ammoniated, blend that in, and you'll have a filler. So that'll extend the amount of beef you have. This process was created by an organization, a company called Beef Products Inc. It's actually located in South Dakota. It's extremely lucrative process, and the product is actually in over 70% of the ground meat that we consume every day.
Well, that just kind of that infuriates me. First, I have to say a major yuck when you were describing how pink slime is this stuff. If meat is full of pathogens, these scraps are full of pathogens and have been dropped on the floor, I wouldn't even want to fill it to my dog. You know, I wouldn't want to feed that to my dog at all. So if that is then added to beef that I buy, which when I go into the store and say, I want to buy a pound of ground beef, and I'm not getting ground beef, I'm getting ground beef that has been ground up with this pink slime. So what I'm paying for isn't what I'm getting. So that absolutely infuriates me. So this beef products company Inc. in South Dakota, who was the whistleblower on that and who brought this to light?
Well, actually, the whistleblower there was a gentleman named Kit Foshi. He was the quality assurance manager for BPI. He became aware of the product and what BPI was saying about the product specifically, which is that it was so safe you didn't even have to test it for pathogens, which I think was the critical moment where Kit said he could no longer play along with BPI. He was terminated because he refused to tell this fraudulent lie to potential customers. And customers in that case are things like entities like Taco Bell or McDonald's or Wendy's. He just wouldn't go along with it. He thought it was a dangerous product, and he ultimately came to Gap after he was terminated for whistleblower support and advocacy.
Well, I think that's great that he had Gap to come to. And again, for our listeners, Gap is Government Accountability Project that we mentioned at the beginning of the show. So he's the one who brought it to light. And I know recently there's been on the network news, ABC specifically, a network news investigation into it on the Diane Sawyer Evening News Show. And I think there has been such a huge reaction to that, that I think more and more consumers have been saying, no, we don't want that. And interestingly enough, though, it was not the pink slime story was not carried on the other networks and not carried on NBC specifically. But so now that this is out, stores are now saying that they are going to no longer receive these blocks of pink slime and grind them into their beef. I've seen some stores on the news here just today of additional stores that are all jumping on the bandwagon to no longer carry this. Is that what you're finding as well?
Well, you know, it came in waves. So there was an initial New York Times expose about pink slime. And in that, it explained the process and what was really going on there and how it was in meat. And then immediately thereafter, the big fast food companies came back to the New York Times and said, well, we're not giving up on BPI. We still trust BPI. So it was a matter of time for those companies, those entities, the fast food entities, to pull out of the BPI production chain. So they had to find alternatives to getting their ground beef for their hamburgers, and at the same time not losing too much money because the filler is so inexpensive. So that happened. Then once the fast food companies found themselves in a position to withdraw their support, withdraw their purchasing of BPI product, then suddenly you saw a real sea change. So McDonald's comes forward, Burger King, Taco Bell, all the big players say, we're not going to use BPI product. Suddenly there's a huge shift. People start to notice that these big companies are leaving this product. And as they left, something else remained, and that was the National School Lunch Program. And that was the point. That was the major tipping point for what we see right now, which is a huge withdrawal from stores and grocery stores and different retailers from use of that product. And I'll tell you, for as much as they're pulling out and quitting their purchasing of BPI product, there's still so much on the market. And the problem is you're not going to know that. You're not going to, you know, if you buy some frozen patties, like some Bubba Burgers or whatever you buy, and you look at the packaging, it's not going to say, I contain beef trimmings not fit for dogs. There's no such labeling there. And that's the real kicker, is that this product got through FDA and USDA, and it didn't require labeling. And that's the loophole you see exploited over and over and over with the industry. And that's the generally recognized as safe exception to product labeling. So it's often just referred to as GRAS, G-R-A-S. And that's what's most troubling, because we have this in so many of our foodstuffs. And this is just the beginning. This pink slime is really just one example of a larger problem with food production and processing, and the regulatory agencies that really do fail to protect, warn, and at least inform their consumers.
Well, and you mentioned something that I do want to go back to, because in the research I did, when you go to a grocery store, even though stores like Safeway, A&P, Whole Foods, Costco, Publix, HEB, Waldom's, and Price Chopper have all said they will not sell meat with pink slime, which is, and Albertsons too is in that list, which to me is the high road. However, there are stores that are saying, I'm not going to sell pink slime in store ground beef, but they're going to sell it in these prepackaged beef that they get from other suppliers. Those I've checked were Jewel, Osco, Kroger, Food Lion, Winco, and Fred Meyer. So it's important as a consumer, just because you know that a store, or you think a store, doesn't sell a beef with, you know, with pink slime in it, you've also got to be aware that any beef product or any product with beef in it could potentially contain this pink slime. So,
well, I mean, you're absolutely right. Any product could contain this, and you would not know it.
Well, and then there's the stores that are just holding on and saying they're going to continue to sell store ground meat with pink slime, including Target, BJ's, Hy-Vee, Walmart, Stop and Shop, and Zacon. And of course, that's as of today. Things could change, but I think the really important thing is for consumers and for our listeners to be very aware that the meat that they buy, if they're looking at buying ground beef, they can ask, you know, ring someone in the butcher department and say, does this contain pink slime? But if it's prepackaged or frozen, there's going to be no way to know for exactly the reasons you mentioned, because it's not on the label. And that is just, it just brings up such a huge issue that I know Food Integrity Now is very sensitive to, and that is the lack of labeling so that consumers can make an informed decision.
Right. That, again, it's an oft exploited loophole of the food industry, this GRAS determination. It's what they're banking on. That's what they do. If you don't know it's in there, you're not going to avoid it. And that's the way it shakes out with this product, and really with many others. I mean, there's sources of mercury that find their way into foodstuffs. The list goes on. Lots of heavy metals, based on GRAS distinction. And it's unfortunate. But again, this is a good beginning. This is a good first step toward exposing these types of problems. And it's the real benefit of this exposure, this BPI exposure, is hopefully we'll get into the larger discourse, which is, how do these businesses do this? And why aren't our regulatory watchdogs barking? And who is there to stop this type of fraud against the public and consumers, and even customers of BPI? We think of customers as you and me and Bob down the street, but customers of BPI were very large institutions in and of themselves. And in some ways, they were duped. In other ways, they knew exactly what was going on. And in those ways, they were sort of, you know, part of this problem. They need to offer product at a low price, and there's a market for it. And when it comes to meat consumption, I mean, without a doubt, it's people are really willing to sacrifice the integrity of their food for inexpensive proteins, animal proteins. And so BPI responded to that demand, and that's what we got.
So you're saying that because there's a demand for inexpensive or lower, do you feel that there would be such a demand for lower priced meat products if people really knew what was in it? Because to me, if you're buying a pound of ground beef, I'm expecting it to be truly ground beef. I'm not expecting someone to try to make an extra buck off of me by adding these awful fillers that, like you said, like we were talking earlier, probably shouldn't even be in dog food. You know, there's no way for as a consumer to know this.
Well, my general philosophy on these things is, you know, hey, there are people that might be quite comfortable with eating low-cost filler, and they might see the process as producing something that is basically safe, and it doesn't alter the flavor in any real way or any real meaningful way that a consumer could really notice. But the end of the day is, don't we all have a choice whether we eat that kind of food that is you know, really is scrap, you know, cleansed, Mr. Cleaned scraps of beef, it, or not? You know, do you want to pay a dollar? Or do you want to pay $1.50? And that's the question that gets presented over and over again in food, but in particular with the meat industry, and certainly when you look at CAFOs, and whether they are ethical and humane handling, and what it is that we think that we're eating, and how did we get it? Where is it sourced? What happened to get it to me? What are the costs environmentally, health, and net pain even? Meat is an interesting animal in that way. It has a lot of different things that must be included in the calculus when you decide to eat it. And the reality is, I think on the balance, people would eat a lot less meat if the industry itself were more candid about what it takes to bring it to your table.
I certainly agree with that, and we're going to take just a brief commercial break, and we'll be right back.
My name is Jennifer, and I'm a health fanatic. I admit it. I read all the labels, eat organic food, and I'm very aware of what I put into my body. I practice holistic health, use alternative healing products, and never miss my daily dose of Willard water. Willard water is made with fossilized organics and contains nearly 24 trace minerals that are essential to maintaining strong bones, heart health, and good energy. Simply adding a quarter capful of Willard water to my tea makes a tremendous impact on my overall well-being. Willard water is tasteless and odorless. Dr. Willard's patented catalyst helps our bodies better absorb the minerals and nutrients we need to maintain optimal health. If you care about your health, you'll try Willard water today.
To learn more about the benefits of Willard water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
Welcome back. We're talking with Amanda Hitt from the Food Integrity Campaign for Government Accountability Project, and we're talking about pink slime, and we're talking about how there is a demand for cheaper and cheaper food, which consumers would naturally like to have a better price, but consumers are not aware of what's in the cheaper meats and how the lack of labeling doesn't give a consumer very much information as to what's in the food. And there's also the controversy, Amanda, that ammonia, if you look at any product, Mr. Clean, as you mentioned, any product that says that it contains ammonia says it's poisonous. So how do they get away with using a poisonous gas on our food?
Well, it's incredibly simple. You take this block of highly concentrated pink slime ammonia, not really slimy. It's more of a block. I don't know where the pink slime came from quite, but it is a big ammonia block. Just think of it like a tablet of ammonia, and then you drop it in a bowl and swirl it around. So the tablet itself would have been very toxic and very dangerous to consume, but once mixed into the bowl, it dilutes considerably. But I guess the water bowl tablet is not very, very good, because this tablet, this ammonia, of course, extends the amount of product, because, like I said, it's a filler. So it is by in and of itself as a product, it's not edible. No one could eat it, and it's certainly not safe. If mixed in proper proportion, it's not particularly noticeable. The problem is there's no guaranteeing that people are mixing it incorrectly. So you might get higher levels of ammonia or low levels of ammonia. And the belief is for the customers of BPI that this ammonia brick, the BPI product, actually has a prophylactic effect. So it's so highly concentrated with ammonia that it actually dilutes the pathogen level of the entire lot of ground beef. So here we have another deceptive practice by BPI. Well, you know, use our gross product and it'll spread its ammonia around, and your meat's going to be safer. McDonald's or whatever organization, institution that they send it to, including the National School Lunch Program or the suppliers to them, they say this and they bring out this product. And yet they don't give these companies any real understanding of how much of this brick it would actually take to make their lot safer, their lot of ground beef. So what happens is a lot of these customers would know, right? So they wouldn't want the smell of ammonia in their product, their end product of ground beef. So they'd put less of the brick in, and then consequently not test as rigorously for pathogens, because they were like, well, I dropped my ammonia brick, pink slime, whatever you want to call it, into my lot. The pink slime must have purified the rest of the beef. This may sound absurd, but this is exactly how it went down. So there you have it. You have something that you don't really understand the concentrations necessary to have a protective effect against pathogens. And at the same time, the block itself, the pink slime itself, is actually full of pathogens. So it's a really, it's a curious product. It's a lot of ingenuity went into that. BPI is certainly known for its scientific approach to beef technologies. And this was it. This was their product. And they worked hard to get it through the FDA and USDA. And in the end, we were all eating it. So they really worked the system.
Well, for me, the way I would label it is that's total lack of integrity when it comes to, you know, giving them a filler that has poison on it. And who established the acceptable levels of ammonia, which is a poison? And have there been any long-term studies of people consuming this product and not getting seriously ill?
The reality of the situation is that pink slime, I just call it, it really is a frozen block of pink. You can't eat it as it is. It's not edible. You could not eat it. The stench, in fact, the smell was so horrendous that a Georgia meat inspector who discovered these BPI frozen products actually pulled it and called it adulterated, because the smell of ammonia was so intense coming off of it. I can't even, and yet it was, it's labeled 100% pure beef. And yet the stench off of it, this guy was like, oh, I got to get it out, and I got to get it out of the stream of commerce. He was very concerned about it, sent it to the USDA, let them know what was going on. Could you get sick off of eating that? Yes, you definitely could. In improper dilution of that into non-ammoniated beef, certainly you could get sick from that, although ammonia cooks off really well. It does evaporate. So in the cooking process, it'll release an oxygen, and then you'll end up with some water, and then the rest will go into the atmosphere. So that's one plus about it. I think that the likelihood of you getting sick from that product won't be because of the ammonia. It'll be because of those pathogens that are not, in fact, they do not decrease. Those pathogens that do not decrease in the ammoniation process, like staph, like listeria, still remain in that product, and it's disingenuous to make a claim that BPI product is safer than anything else going, or that it will provide this safety measure to end product, when in fact you are introducing higher levels of listeria and staph. So that never really got out there. There was some mention in the press, but there is a safety hazard beyond just ammonia in the meat or the meat product. So, and that hasn't really gotten a lot of lip service because it is sort of salacious, and it is sort of interesting for folks to just consider this notion of someone pouring ammonia on beef scraps and handing it over to your kid in the cafeteria. But there's more to it, and I'm sure that more about that will come out in the future.
Well, and speaking of that, there's a Dr. V.H. Potty, who's a food safety technologist. He was recently quoted in a blog called Food Tech Updates that if you don't want bacteria on your food, that you have to treat it. And he said this ammonium hydroxide is only one of many, quote, safe and sustainable ingredients that have been approved by the U.S. government to eliminate pathogens on raw meat products. And he said that there's about a 52-page, I can't believe this, 52-page list of approved chemicals that companies can use to treat raw meat, poultry, and egg products without labeling them. And then get this, this is what just, I couldn't believe this. They can label them, they can not label the products that these chemicals are in them, because technically that's considered a process and not an ingredient. And he went on to say that if consumers are up in arms about the use of ammonia, what are they going to do when they find out other chemicals like liquid chlorine is also used in our food products? Do you have any response to that? The idea that they're using the technicality that these chemicals are part of a process and not an ingredient as an excuse not to label them?
Well, I agree in part and disagree in other parts.
Okay, please explain.
I agree that the loophole that was exploited was the generally recognized as safe processing agent exception for labeling. I agree with that. Where he is fundamentally wrong is that isn't in fact what BPI did. Yeah, they're a processing agent. I get that. So he's talking about the, chlorine, and that's just, it's bleach water. I mean, they give chickens a good dunk in the bleach water before they get shipped off, and that's a fact, and that's all very disturbing. That's extremely disturbing, and it's more common. These chemical interventions are more the norm than they have ever been in meat processing. It's a nice cheap way of destroying pathogens without having to practice good hygiene, and in that they are forfeiting hygiene again to keep meat prices really, really low, much lower than their true costs. And when you see that, you think immediately exploitation. But we can talk about that maybe later on in the conversation. But back to this processing agent situation. If you knew the product better, the creation of the BPI pink slime product, you would see that this is clearly not a processing agent. This is without question an ingredient. I mean, if you've seen the mm-hmm. non-blended block, you will know that this isn't just a residual chemical left over from processing. This is very much an ingredient. And the way that BPI got around this is in the exception for grass, they actually have things that are, they grant the exception for things that are naturally part of natural metabolic function. So ammonium hydroxide is found in mussels. It's in you right now. It's in cheeses. It's in breads. It's naturally occurring. But what we have in BPI's product is anhydrous ammonia. That does not naturally exist in the human animal or cheese and leavening and all of these other agents. It's Mr. Clean. After it's processed further, it turns into ammonium hydroxide. But at the moment that it's injected through gas bath, if you will, it's actually Mr. Clean. This is an exception. BPI is very much it's a loophole. This isn't bleaching the chicken at the end of the line and packaging it. It's a different thing, and it's much worse, and it's indicative of where the meat industry is going. It's this level of deception. That's where they're at, and that's where they will continue to move as long as they can create a cheap product. And yes, of course, there are really way too many chemicals that are used to, I'm air quoting here, clean meat products.
Well, and one of the things that you mentioned earlier that I also found in my research just made my heart sick. It was about how the beef product that has been, ground beef that's been combined with this pink slime block is being shipped to all of our schools, where our school children, though those who come from lower incomes, that's the only food, the only hot meal that they may get for the day. And it's going to be this, in my opinion, contaminated beef. Can you talk about what's going on and what the, you know, because I believe this started last year, did it not, sending the meat to the schools?
Oh, no, it did not start last year. This is almost a decade of
serving. Oh, my God.
Yeah, this is not new. I think, I'm not sure when their initial contract was, but at least 8 to 10 years ago, it's been a while, that it's been in the food system, but it's been in your, you know, if you eat ground beef, it's been in your system too. I mean, the National School Lunch Program is, you know, it's a cost saving, situation, and you wouldn't want your tax dollars to go to waste. So you want to extend the amount of ground beef that your school district can buy, right? So at the cheapest amount. So it's a customer of BPI as well. I don't want to get too far into it, but you know, school lunch is not, it's not a good place. I mean, it's not a good thing. And there's been a lot of movements to improve school lunch. And I do think that there's a long way to go.
Well, one of the things that I saw in doing my research for the show was that because of all of the efforts, certainly, that GAP and Food Integrity Campaign has done to bring awareness, you know, to support the whistleblower and to bring awareness to all of this, that and consumers finally waking up, which I think they are. I mean, fundamentally, we are still, although some political parties would like to change that, I think, we are still a consumer-driven economy. And all we have to do is create enough public awareness to create change. And what I read, and I hope this is true, is that school districts, they will have the option of opting out of using this pink slime in as part of the national school program. Had you heard anything along those lines?
They definitely, yes, they have the opportunity, and you know, school districts are opting out all over, really. It's a bit unfortunate, though, that this is the only thing that they're raising a fuss about. But I am glad that people are aware and waking up to these types of issues. But again, you know, your surprise is evidence. This isn't new. This isn't new at all. I mean, this has been out and open, and it was as I said very early in our conversation, the rest of the industries had to prep for today, and you can't deny that. They had to get their ducks in a row and get their supply chains ready to dissolve themselves of BPI, and then the changes started to occur. The Safeways, the Giants, everybody pulling out, National School Lunch Program. Suddenly they care, even though AMS, which is division of the USDA that oversees the National School Lunch Program, they knew all along what was going on. In fact, this is common knowledge. So why did it take a decade? Well, it took a decade for the industry to figure out its next move and how it was going to extricate itself from this the cheap product that BPI put out.
So apparently the industry is in essence scapegoating a company that they have partnered with and collaborated with and are just as guilty with for the past decade.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. And you see it with these major corporations. They're not doing, I mean, they don't do things because they have a humanitarian mission. And if you should never ever confuse the goals of a corporation with the goals of let's say a nonprofit like the Government Accountability Project or FIC or Food Integrity Now. It's a very different game. It's a profit motive. And they have to make sure that their house is in order to withstand a national attack, where I believe it is, or a national outcry against pink slime. So they took their time, they got everything together, and BPI took the fall. And BPI, I'm sure, will rise again with another, Frankenstein's monster, you know, some other crazy product that's cheap and ready to use. And we'll move on. And you see the environmental too. I mean, so many things beyond food. It's really the, oh, we have this leftover bad thing. Let's, you know, put it into bridges and roads or, underneath playground equipment. It's one of those things. It seems like a good reduce, reuse, recycle kind of phenomenon, but it's actually, disguised waste. And instead of doing the right thing and paying as you go when it comes to your environmental choices and food choices.
So what you're saying is this whole process, the process of it coming to light, has been orchestrated in order to put corporations within the industry in the best light by scapegoating BPI, who, after the dust settles, will come back again and rise from the ashes.
I suspect they will. They're very innovative, and yeah. Eldon Roth is quite an innovator in the industry. He might be done for. It might be the end of his time as king of the compost heap, but he will certainly be around to some degree in the industry.
Well, thank you, Amanda. We're going to take a final break here and then come back and talk about the Food and Drug Administration and the USDA and what the difference is, what do they focus on. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
My name is Jennifer, and I'm a health fanatic. I admit it. I read all the labels, eat organic food, and I'm very aware of what I put into my body. I practice holistic health, use alternative healing products, and never miss my daily dose of Willard Water. Willard Water is made with fossilized organics and contains nearly 24 trace minerals that are essential to maintaining strong bones, heart health, and good energy. Simply adding a quarter capful of Willard Water to my tea makes a tremendous impact on my overall well-being. Willard Water is tasteless and odorless. Dr. Willard's patented catalyst helps our bodies better absorb the minerals and nutrients we need to maintain optimal health. If you care about your health, you'll try Willard Water today.
To learn more about the benefits of Willard Water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard Water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
Hi, we're back and we're talking with Amanda Hitt, and we're going to be talking now about the Food and Drug Administration and the USDA, what the difference is, and how, what's interesting, Amanda, is that both of these agencies, I guess technically the FDA is an agency as part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, but the USDA is a full government department headed by the Secretary of Agriculture, how they have separate missions and sometimes overlapping agendas, and also what a perception by the consumer and, you know, by most U.S. citizens that both organizations are going to protect the consumer, and how that is an illusion. Can you expand on this for us?
Well, ideally, an agency, it would be a consumer that you know, especially certainly FDA, which is Food and Drug Administration. So, just starting with them, they're a public health organization. I mean, that's what that agency does. So it monitors, you know, food and then pharmaceuticals, devices, cosmetics, everything, you name it. I mean, that's FDA, right? So FDA does most everything, and then you have USDA, which is primarily an agricultural agency that's main mission is to protect U.S. agriculture, and it actually oversees beef and poultry and egg products. But just a small little section of the world is monitored by USDA, and FDA is all the rest, and of course FDA is all the rest of food and then a ton of other stuff too. So it's a heavily taxed organization. But they're not the same at all. Not just the different things that they regulate, but their philosophical missions and how they undertake protecting food is quite different. So let's start with the USDA, the meat and poultry agency, and they, as I mentioned earlier, their focus is not public health. It's the protection of the American agricultural interests. So just starting there, you see that there's this conflict of interest. How do you regulate the beef industry and promote it at the same time? So you have this sort of schizophrenic issue with regard to the USDA, and in many ways that plays out in its regulatory actions, and you'll see a lot of conflict there, and certainly a lack of oversight, and certainly a feeling as if the agency, in this case USDA, is actually working for the industry, so beef or poultry or something of that nature. So they're rotating in their sphere, and then you have the FDA, which is it's got less resources to monitor. I mean, you know, on the whole, it's got less resources to actually inspect and protect food safety, and yet they have the public health mission, but they're so spread out into these different areas that they're not really able to do so effectively. Sometimes they'll inspect an FDA facility like juice or just really anything, cantaloupes, at best every 5 years. So just thinking about that, you've got inspections going on in the FDA every 5 years, and then within the USDA, it's daily inspection. So what's referred to as continuous inspection of the products coming off the line. So they're very different, not in just the you know what they regulate, but also again in their mission and in their philosophy and in their conflicts. Although both at the end of the day, most people would agree that there is a real issue about who it is they're actually protecting. Are they protecting the consumer, or are they protecting the industries they're supposed to be regulating?
Well, and thank you for that explanation, because where part of my confusion was on, you know, USDA, I'm thinking, okay, I see on the packages of meat, back to meat again, you know, it says USDA approved or USDA, you know, you get the stamp of approval, which implies, at least from a consumer's perspective, that they're concerned about me. But the more digging you do into them, exactly as you said, their mission is to help the farmers and the ranchers and the corporate food productions. You know, that's their target, you know, and what to do to protect them, and that the industry is number one to them and not the consumer. And clearly, as evidenced with our prior discussion on Pink Slime, there's two totally different perspectives between an industry, a profit-making industry that wants to sell, and the consumer. So, how does the typical consumer reconcile the idea that because something is stamped as USDA approved, that to me is confusing, because it sounds like it's concerned for the consumer.
Well, I guess you have to sort of pull apart the people that endeavor to keep your food safe, like the meat inspectors, and in many ways the plant workers themselves that are doing their best to keep your food safe, and then the larger systemic issues within government agencies and general inefficiencies that people can cite to when they think about governmental regulation. So the people that put that stamp on your meat care very much about the safety of their consumers. And it's easy, and it's an easy explanation. Everybody eats. So an inspector that's putting that stamp of approval on your meat very much understands that food goes to his or her child or aunt or mother and so forth, sister. Everybody eats. So I don't think it's never quite fair to suggest that stamp is meaningless. The issues, however, occur at a much, much higher level and in different degrees and in different areas spread out among that. We're talking about the USDA. So you're going to see those issues play out with removal, like a removal of USDA power from the industry. So what you're getting is more privatization, more increased likelihood that the plant can get away with these sort of nefarious actions, these bad actions, and the inspector is sort of the positions are eliminated or they're relegated into something that's less meaningful. So again, the stamp is degrading, but not based on the people that are, you know, making that assertion that this is safe meat. At the Government Accountability Project and here at the Food Integrity Campaign, we get a lot of reports from inspectors, and they are concerned that the plants are, you know, that the foxes really are guarding the hen houses. And by that I mean that the inspectors are not able to perform their consumer protection tasks and their public health mission. Again, USDA does have a food and safety inspection service, and that's who oversees the consumer protection food safety for USDA. And it's got a lot of dedicated people on the ground. But upstairs, there's a lot of motivation, political motivation, to support big agriculture. And I know we're talking about meat and poultry, but the Secretary of Agriculture and the interactions between FDA and huge mega industries like Cargill, but then in the non-animal agriculture like Monsanto, you're seeing these very big players have an incredible amount of influence over the entire system. So don't, it's very difficult to, you know, not conflate those issues, but there are very good people working very hard to keep your food safe and put safe things on your table. And then there are these much bigger, storms surrounding the power of industry, obviously not just in food, although I believe perhaps most detrimentally in food because of the impact that food consumption has overall and the health of really, you know, the planet beyond just the United States. But you know, you do have this industry influence, and it's worth following, and it's worth consumers' time to stay on top of and really push for greater consumer protections and more accountability within government agencies.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that type of clarity is helpful for both myself and certainly our listeners. But when you talked about Monsanto is a big red flag to Food Integrity Now. We have, because of this relationship between the FDA and Michael Taylor, to be specific, who's an executive, started off as a lawyer for Monsanto, then ended up crossing over and working for the FDA, then went back to Monsanto as a senior executive, then went back to the FDA or something very similar to that, and now has been appointed as Obama's food czar. Now, to me, that analogy you used of the fox guarding the hen house, to me, that's a classic example of it. And in the political influence and in areas that really should be separate between corporations and the agencies that should regulate them. There should not be this interaction and interplay, certainly from our perspective. What is your perspective on that?
Well, I totally agree with you. I don't think this sort of rotating door phenomenon, the agency capture situation, Mike Taylor, because he worked at Monsanto and knows GMOs, should work for the FDA and regulate GMOs. So it's kind of a silly thing. I think that when you see that level of just obvious absurdity, I think that it's almost like a caricature of what's happening, really in all the agencies, but It's almost funny, except for it's true, that this is kind of how it works with the FDA and USDA. I've definitely had my time working in drug safety as well, and it's just ridiculous in the pharmaceutical areas where you see people coming from Pfizer and into the FDA and back and forth, and really, you know, they'll leave the agency and they'll teach Pfizer what it's like or whatever. I'm just using Pfizer, but what it's like or what is needed to get this drug approved. And we're seeing it in food, certainly. You know, Vilsack is not himself a particularly, he's a big industry guy. I mean, he owes his success to, these mega corporations, these ag corporations. And is it going to show in the agency? Absolutely. It doesn't matter what's about the administration when there are agency heads that definitely, they're beholden to industry, and that's how it works. And Monsanto is, you know, everybody watches Monsanto. I mean, I see them as, you know, they have a huge bullseye on them, and they might not be the worst player in town, although I've heard stories that they are pretty bad, like their reputation is well earned. But they sure do give us incredible insight into what it is that we're trying to target. What is it that's wrong in agriculture that we need to target? And we need to see beyond these statements that, you know, suggest that without Monsanto, everybody in the world would die. You know, they create a situation. They create their own scenario and then write in themselves as the hero of the day. And I think that consumers really need a wake up call. We do need to understand that there are more factors than one mega industry, one major company, protecting the world's food security, you know, and there has to be a different way of looking at things. And I think that we can start seeing things a little in a different light if we start seeing industries like Monsanto first for who they really are, and understand that the goal is not to make people in Africa happy and chubby and well fed, you know, that's not the goal. The goal is to exploit as many people for profit as they absolutely can. and make the world feel good about it. It's like the Disney world of exploitation. Like, come join Monsanto and be very, very happy that we're making your future a little less exciting and healthy, you know?
I agree with you, Amanda, and I couldn't have said it better, that relationship and it's master manipulation to be able to do what Monsanto does with controlling the GMO seeds and putting the kill gene in it, in those seeds, so that farmers can't reuse the seeds and make them then totally dependent upon Monsanto, and yet present to the world that they are this, you know, magnanimous company out to feed the third world nations and end world hunger. It is so ludicrous, but it's all about people waking up. And that's part of what Food Integrity is doing. That's part of what we're doing here today with you in this show. And as we come to the close of it, Amanda, would you like to give our listeners your website one more time?
Yes, you can visit us at www.foodwhistleblower.org, and that's the Government Accountability Project's Food Integrity Campaign.
Well, Amanda, it has been great having you on the show, and I so thank you for all of your insight, and we were very happy to have you on the show, and we thank our listeners, to everyone out there listening once again. And if you like what you hear on the show, please remember to head over to iTunes and leave a comment or a rating for us there. It's the best way to spread this show around and help us along. If you have any show ideas, comments, or even just want to say hi, email us at info@foodintegritynow.org. Would love to hear from you. Check us out on the web at foodintegritynow.org, where you can find all of our archive shows and news. Our new shows come out every Thursday. This is Jeannie Smith wishing you a happy and healthy week. Until next time, stay educated and stay active.